imagine we can get going, right?
I think we can. Okay, let's come back to order. Would you call the roll, please, Carla?
Yes.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. And let's take item 166.
Accept report from Multnomah County Health Department on youth access and exposure to tobacco and e-cigarette products within Multnomah County.
Very happy to welcome Chair Kafoury and her team here this afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having us here today to talk about youth access and exposure to tobacco and e-cigarette or vaping products. Over the last several months, the Multnomah County Board of Health, which is also the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners, has heard testimony from our health department and from the Oregon Health Equity Alliance about the impacts of tobacco and the emerging e-cigarette market on our community's health. We've also heard from high school students, from the police officers who work in our schools, and from scientists who study these products. And as the county is planning to consider taking action tomorrow at our board meeting, we want to make sure that all the information that we've been hearing is shared with you as well. We've also been to 4 out of the 5 cities so far in Multnomah County to talk with our residents across Multnomah County about this issue because it's so very important. So we all know that smoking is harmful, and it kills nearly 1,200 people a year in our county alone. We don't want our kids to smoke, and we have spent decades changing public opinion around smoking. However, there's a new product on the market, or not so new anymore, but it still seems new to me, called e-cigarettes. These are being marketed in flavors that are attractive to children and can be legally sold to youth. This industry threatens to reverse the progress that we have made in reducing smoking among youth. I was really shocked when I first learned that my 9-year-old can go to any store in our community and legally purchase and use e-cigarettes. Many of these vaping liquids contain nicotine and other ingredients that can and are harmful. Recently, a child died from ingesting e-cigarette liquid, and just last week, a Portland child spent 9 hours in the ER after she ingested this vaping liquid. We don't know what ingredients are included because there is no labeling requirement for e-cigarettes. But we do know that they're popular with kids and that use has tripled among U.S. middle school and high school students between 2011 and 2013. Multiple states and local jurisdictions across our country have taken steps to address this growing health concern. As I said, tomorrow, Multnomah County is considering expanding the Indoor Clean Air Act to include e-cigarettes and restricting sales to and use by youth of these vaping products. In addition, we are going to consider taking action this summer on retail licensing, which is a key piece component to this. Right now, we don't know who's selling these products in our community, and it makes it very hard to educate the people that work in these stores and the owners about the emerging markets. We do know, however, that the federal government does a study every year, and Multnomah County has the dubious distinction of having one of the highest rates of illegal sales to minors in the country. So we believe that as the Board of Health, we have a responsibility to consider how we can stop kids from buying and selling and using e-cigarettes and how that we can educate retailers and keep our community healthy. I hope you will support us in these efforts, and I'm really happy to introduce Dr. Jen Vines, who is a county health officer.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. I'm Jennifer Vines. I'm the deputy health officer for Multnomah County Health Department, and I'm a family doctor by training and then also trained in preventive medicine and got a master's in public health for this very reason, because the chance to impact the health of so many people really comes through working with policymakers like you and like our Board of Health, so it's truly a pleasure to be here today. We're going to give you a very brief overview of the landscape of tobacco and nicotine in Multnomah County. I'm going to speak briefly to the health effects of nicotine, especially as they relate to our young people. And then we're going to be talking about youth access to these products. Again, as Chair Kafoury said, electronic cigarettes are completely unregulated, and any meaningful conversation about keeping these out of kids' hands should also include mention of the tobacco retail environment. So let's go ahead and get started and talk about nicotine and the effects on the young brain. So people think of nicotine as just, you know, the addictive substance in cigarettes, and it's all the bad things in cigarettes that affect your health, and the nicotine, you know, keeps you coming back and continuing to smoke. In fact, nicotine itself has health effects. It's associated with accelerated cardiovascular disease. And in young people, their brains are particularly sensitive to the addictive effects because their brains are still developing. So we have animal models that suggest long-term structural changes to the parts of the brain that control intellectual function and the brain's reward system pathways. And the Surgeon General's report on smoking cites several studies that associate youth nicotine use and behavioral problems later in life, like anxiety and depression and other substance abuse. The image you see here is how quickly three puffs of a cigarette can saturate the brain's receptors in a young person. So these pictures are sort of intended to be shocking. I find them shocking. This is completely legal. We know it's becoming more common. Again, its use has almost tripled among Oregon 11th graders from 2011 to 2013. And here we are in 2015, again, probably with use being even more common than that. But the reason that we talk about young people in relation to this topic is that the vast majority of smokers begin by age 18. So again, young people's brains are particularly susceptible to the addictive effects because they're still developing. Young people are also the targets for the millions and billions of dollars that are spent on marketing these products, not just tobacco, frankly, which should be illegal to sell to minors, but also now, of course, the burgeoning electronic cigarette industry. So these are examples of electronic cigarettes themselves. They're in the middle, and I brought some examples to show you. So this, from a distance, probably looks like a regular cigarette. This is, in fact, meant to be a disposable electronic cigarette. So this is pre-filled with liquid nicotine inside, and then you just inhale, and that triggers the battery to vaporize the liquid, and then, you know, inhale and exhale your puff of smoke there, just like a cigarette. This is called a vape pen, and so the mouthpiece is here, and I can take that off, and you'd unscrew the mouthpiece, and then people will purchase different flavors. So these are some examples. So I can choose from blowin' raspberries or Irish cream or blackberry cobbler. And again, sometimes the ingredients are listed, again, completely unregulated, so may or may not be what's actually in these liquids. Then to fill up your vape pen, and in this case you press the button, which heats up the liquid to vaporize it, and then you inhale it and exhale it that way. I'll go ahead, next slide. So these are photos from the Multnomah County Tobacco Retail Assessment that the Health Department did with community partners. And so you can see on the right, you can see tons and tons of flavors to choose from, again, in these little bottles. And when Chair Kafouri talks about, you know, children ingesting these liquids, I suspect this is what's happening, right? So again, unregulated, not child-proofed, bright colors, they smell sweet. So even our youngest kids are getting their hands on these liquids and risking overdose. And we know that calls to poison control have also exploded in parallel with the explosion of the use of these products. On the left, you can see some, well, maybe it's a very busy, there's a lot in there, but what's actually mixed in there is electronic cigarettes mixed in with candies and sort of other things for people to help themselves too. So again, this is a local retailer where the nicotine products are not behind the counter. Again, they're mixed in with other products that kids may be interested in. I'm going to hand it off to Jay Douglas to, hopefully now that I've gotten you to feel a sense of urgency around this issue, Jay's going to talk through some of the policy solutions that we've been discussing with our Board of Health.
Good afternoon. Again, my name is Dr. Jay Douglas. I'm your Environmental Health Director, and I have the privilege of leading a team that is responsible for ensuring that the existing laws around the Indoor Clean Air Act are followed, adhered to when it comes to tobacco. And we recognize that we've had some public health successes when it comes to reducing the use of tobacco in our population, held in contrast to some notable concerns that we have, you know, we're still dealing with. You heard just a little bit ago about the very high rate of illegal sales that we are still experiencing in Multnomah County. Multnomah County, unfortunately, leads the country in terms of its access to legal sales in the retail environment to youth. So that's why we do focus on the retail environment as the mechanism by which we need to begin to address how youth are accessing these products, existing combustible tobacco, the burnable tobacco, and then these new e-cigarette products. A number of jurisdictions have taken action Retail licensing is probably the most prominent action that many states and 8 communities in Oregon have already taken. And again, that's to begin to identify where these products are being sold and to hold the owners of those establishments accountable to existing law. It's something that we're considering. We know that we need to work with the retail environment in a number of ways, and what you're going to see coming up are different strategies that other jurisdictions have used, including placement of retail shops relative to schools, prohibiting tobacco sales in certain environments. Pharmacies are kind of a notable and logical one. Limiting the advertising. We just heard about the extraordinary numbers, dollars being spent to target advertising, especially to youth. You'll notice, didn't see in that slide, we've had some other pictures from that same survey where advertising is just covering, blanketing the fronts of these small retail stores and are often at high, like, I have a 5-year-old granddaughter, and these are at eye level for her, you know, so, and there's no doubt that these bright colors and good-smelling flavors are enticing to young people, and I think can begin to normalize the presence of these products in environments where children, small children, larger children, can easily reach out and take them. So we know that there are a number of strategies. I do like the graphic that you're seeing here about the other kinds of activities that require a license, which does not at this time include selling tobacco. We do know that putting products behind the counter will increase the likelihood that the employee will have to think a little more clearly about selling a product to a person who's underage. Price discounting is a strategy that industry uses to make it easy. We know that youth in particular are extraordinarily price sensitive, and so strategies for reducing packaging size and allowing coupons to reduce the price is a kind of an easy way to invite people into the use of these products. And there are jurisdictions that have banned flavoring. We know that these flavors are noxious, and flavoring is used to make them more palatable. So there, again, number of strategies that have been considered, all of which we are considering also in the context of retail licensing. Just want to review the 3 actions that we as the board, the Department of Health, have asked our Board of Health to consider undertaking. We know that we do not want to create another generation of people who are addicted to nicotine and battle lifelong addiction with the substance. And so at a minimum, we want to establish a minimum sales age for these products if adults choose to use them. That is their prerogative, but youth, we want to make sure that we keep these out of the hands of our youth. We also know that the vast majority of adults will not use these products, and especially because we know so little about what is in the products, both that are being inhaled and also expelled, that we want to make sure that people who choose not to use the products aren't inadvertently exposed by other people using the products. And so we're looking to expand e-cigarettes into the smoke-free workplace policy. We're also encouraged by some conversations that are happening in Salem during this session that would expand the Indoor Clean Air Act to include e-cigarettes and thereby making it unlawful to use these products in any place where tobacco can't be used. And finally, we know that there's a lot of work to do in the retail environment. We know that the vast majority of retailers would like some help and support. We know of many retailers who are choosing not to sell any tobacco products, and so we'd like to encourage that. And for the ones who do choose to sell tobacco products, we want to make sure that they understand what the laws are and that they are able to, and we are able to support their adherence to those laws. So that is the end of my remarks, and we're happy to take any questions.
Thanks. Actually, if you could go back to your 3 policy columns there. So thank you very much for doing this. As somebody whose children are all now 20-plus years old, I'm not having to think about some of the dilemmas that some of you might. And therefore, I'm also not aware of the pressures, you know, at least personally, as aware as I would have been, say, 10 years ago, of the pressures that kids are under. So I really appreciate this eye-opening, for me anyway, presentation. Does the Board of Health have the legal authority to do these things now, or do you need legislative changes in order to have that authority? In other words, to establish a minimum age for purchasing, and also the column that's missing, but I want to hear more about, which is the retail regulation and licensing column. Do you have the authority you would like to have?
Excuse me, that's a great question. We do believe that we have the authority, and we are. That's why we're going to be taking action, having a first reading on the first two pieces of this tomorrow. We're asking the other cities in Multnomah County to participate in whatever way they feel they need to appease their constituents and their lawyers. Some feel that they need to positively affirm our ordinance. Some feel that they need to pass their own ordinance. We just want a uniform standard, and that's why ultimately we are spending time in Salem lobbying the legislature. Obviously, all of these issues are best if it's in a statewide context. The licensure piece is a little more complex than just saying, you know, thou can't sell tobacco to minors or e-cigarettes to minors. So we're hoping that the legislature takes action. We're going to wait until sessions finish. We're going to be spending a lot of time lobbying. And then this summer we'll look into setting up a program of our own if the legislature does not take action.
Okay. Other questions? I have some comments, but maybe I'll get the questions on the table.
What are you going to set as the legal age for being able to buy this stuff?
We're looking at making it consistent with the tobacco regulation, so it would be 18.
Did you think about making it 21 like alcohol?
We've had conversations about it. We haven't heard a lot of comments from the public about the age difference.
It's interesting. I learned as part of our marijuana discussions that marijuana affects brains disproportionately up to 25. And so, especially knowing how addictive this particular form is, I'd be interested in seeing if we could push the age limits. We have not yet had a discussion about whether we want to formally adopt yours. Are we covered by your ordinance unless we say we're not?
You should talk with your own legal counsel. We believe that acting as the Board of County Commissioners on policy directions from the Board of Health, that you do not need to. You're underneath our rules and regulations, but that's something that you should talk with your legal counsel about. And you raise a really good point, which is about the legalization of marijuana. One of the things that we hadn't, I don't think maybe you smart people have, but I hadn't anticipated when we started this conversation, is that teens being smart and wily are way ahead of us, and they've already are smoking hash oil in their e-cigarettes in schools. And we've heard from some of the school resource officers who confiscate these products on a daily basis from students that kids are smoking them in school, in class.
Well, we'll check with our city attorneys, but I believe personally that the County Board of Commissioners and the County Board of Health have full authority to do this without cities having to do anything. If it's helpful to you for us to pass other ordinances of our own, you know, obviously I'd be interested in having that conversation, but I don't think we have to act to affirm authority that I believe that you have. And that this is one of those cases where there's a fairly clear assignment of responsibility for public health to one government, namely the county, and not to another, namely cities. But my opinion, and again, if we need to do something to back your play, I'm certainly interested. Like Commissioner Fritz, I would say my personal feelings are go stronger, go more aggressively into this arena with our support. I suspect our unanimous support from this council. I'm very interested in the issue of retail licensing. And in other words, I don't think a free market is a good way to address an addictive substance. And frankly, I'm a little frustrated that we're even having this conversation. If we had an effective Food and Drug Administration in this country, you wouldn't be having to take this on at the county level. But unfortunately, I guess we don't. But anyway, I think we have to get pretty aggressive about the marijuana issue in terms of licensing. And I think the traditional approach, which you sort of mentioned in passing, doesn't really work. And that is to draw circles around things and say, don't locate within this circle or that circle. I think we actually have to be much more directive and say, we want these kinds of facilities here, here, and here, and actually nowhere else, and figure that out, not only on a public health basis, but on a land use basis. And let me go off on a little bit of a riff here, but I think it'll be helpful. For example, there are places where we want land use change. Let's say a roadway somewhere in Portland where there's an old trailer sitting out there and they're selling used cars, and it might be good to have a mixed-use building on that site. We don't particularly want to make it economic to keep the old trailer out there and, say, sell marijuana instead of redeveloping that property. So we have a land use interest in not having new economic uses applied to land uses that we're trying to phase out. And I think that issue comes to bear here as well, that if it's possible to make a high rate of return from selling products that are fundamentally unhealthy but are lucrative, that might also contradict some of our community development goals as a city and a county. So again, my belief is that we're going to have to be much more than traditional regulators and say, don't be near here, don't be near there, but to say, actually, you're a particular type of use that we want to assign to certain places in the landscape where we believe it will do the least harm. And I don't know exactly how to finish that paragraph now, but as you can tell, I've, at least in my mind, started it to say, we better get this right, because there are very powerful economic incentives behind marijuana and behind vaping. And I think we better get pretty smart and aggressive about it. So I'm really glad you made this presentation. As you can tell from my comments and others here, we're saying, please go, we're behind you. But we also may need to do some things in concert, like the marijuana issue, mm-hmm. which we have staff in my office and others working on. Other comments?
Your riff set off something in my mind, and that is, since these products are not currently regulated under state law, could you impose a tax on them? Is the prohibition on taxing also not in state law?
That's a good question. I think potentially we could. One of the challenges is with taxation in this product came to a head last legislative session, and the reason that they're not illegal currently for minors is because it got caught up in a taxation issue, and I think it was our belief that we should move forward with this first and that second, if we want to tie that into the taxation of tobacco products as well.
Right, but if they don't manage to move on that, maybe this summer, you could add a further economic disincentive mm-hmm. by taxing the heck out of it.
Yeah, and again, whether that's something the county should do under your public health authority, that would be cool. Maybe we do it as a city. Maybe we do both. I think those conversations ought to continue. So, yeah, using tax policy as well as regulatory mm-hmm. and land use policy to address this issue is all, I think, fair play as far as I'm concerned. Other comments?
I would encourage you to consider raising the smoking age. In fact, I would suggest raising it to 45, because I think if you're going to kill yourself, it should be an informed decision. And I think at 21, you don't really know yet what your life is worth. I was curious about high violation rate in terms of selling to underage people. And I would just want to, what are the penalties for that? What enforcement mechanisms are there? What enforcement resources are there? I kind of assume that you would be the ones to police that, but actually I'm not aware that there are Multnomah County underage sales police. So what are the mechanisms that are available?
I can offer a small amount of information about that. In Oregon, it's the Oregon State Police who have the jurisdictional authority to monitor the sale of underage. And obviously they're very often distracted by other things. And so I would say it's not a very robust enforcement strategy that we have here in Oregon. So.
Really?
Well, I'm learning a lot in this discussion.
Yeah, the Oregon
have to change. When I was a county commissioner, we used to have deputy sheriff or sheriff cadets do underage things. In fact, I went along on some of them.
I couldn't speak to that. I just know what the enforcement strategy is today. So.
Yeah, because the Oregon State Police essentially don't work in the urban environment. They're working on the highways in between cities, and that's what they do, and that's fine. But, yeah, to expect them to be doing this kind of police work is, to me, bizarre. So that's another glitch.
And I think that one of the problems that we've found is that because there's no retail licensure program, we don't know who, I mean, you can guess that 7-Eleven's Fred Meyer's, but you don't know which mom and pop shop unless you're actually out, driving up and down the streets to find out. You don't know who's selling these products, and I'm sure you've all seen pop-up vans and like the food carts that sell tobacco products. So it's in order to make an enforcement program effective, you need to have the licensure piece tied together.
Mm-hmm.
So were you talking about Oregon State Police only being authorized with respect to e-cigarette sales?
To tobacco.
Tobacco.
Okay.
Tobacco.
Well, there is no enforcement mechanism for e-cigarettes.
Yeah, nothing there
okay.
for e-cigarettes.
Nothing.
Something must have changed, because when I was on the county commission, I went out on stings with sheriffs.
I'm going to look over my shoulder at my staff.
No one's volunteering an answer to that question.
We'll look into that. That's an important point.
Did I get it wrong? Come on up, Carrie.
Pull up another chair if you want.
Please.
So Carrie McFarland with the Health Department and the tobacco team within the Health Department. So
did I get it wrong?
So to answer the question,
sorry.
So it's a bit nuanced, but CINAR is the program at the state.
CINAR?
CINAR, and that is a program named after a former federal congressman who was interested in looking at the illegal rate of sales of cigarettes to minors. And so here in Oregon, we administer the CINAR program, which does do monitoring of illegal sales of cigarettes. So the Oregon State Police are actually retired Oregon State Police officers.
Oh, my.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you for that correction.
So they're actually retired Oregon State Police officers that go out and do these sting operations with a minor decoy.
My apologies for the confusion.
Okay. No, that's fine. Okay. That's fine.
Now it adds up.
And are they funded through the county?
Through the state program.
Through the state program.
Hmm. And so to get back to Jay's comment about under-resourced, that's why our enforcement system is not currently robust.
And I just had one last question, and that was on the retail licensing. So does the county not have the authority to do retail licensing on tobacco sales?
We have not.
Tested it.
Yeah, we're looking into that issue. We think it is a lot cleaner if the legislature takes action and that's a statewide program, so that folks in Multnomah County who don't have to have a license when you don't have to across the border and clock. I mean, having statewide is obviously a better idea. But if they don't pass something in Salem this session, we're going to look at doing something on our own. It's also a longer process, as I said earlier, because we want to involve the retailer community in the conversation so that what the level of fees set out, we need to find out what information and education they would like from the county. So all those decisions will make for a robust and a program that is adhered to.
This might be a question for Ms. McFarland. Maybe that the retired Oregon State Police officers have historically been responsible for enforcement, but are the county and the city precluded from doing our own enforcement? So, theoretically, we could decide to enforce the laws ourselves.
Yeah, again, I'm not an attorney, although we have some on the council, but we're a home rule city and you're a home rule county.
Right.
So we have a charter, you have a charter.
But I think it's been a question of finances, that most of the time when you have a retail licensure program, you're using those funds to hire the staff to go out and do the enforcement and education, so they go hand in hand in most cases.
So that's what you're anticipating, that first you do the licensure and then we could actually fund some enforcement.
Exactly. Correct. Enforcement and education.
Any other questions for this great panel? Well, I want to say thank you for bringing this up as an issue here in our discussions, and obviously for the Board of Health and for the community at large. It's really important. And I hope you'll call on us to work at both an elected level and a staff level cooperation on this. Again, we're having to delve pretty deeply into the questions about marijuana right now. It seems to me that is pretty, connected to these issues. I suspect we'll have a lot of the same retailers involved if we do nothing. And do nothing doesn't sound like a good option here. So we want to encourage you to be aggressive on this issue with our help and support, and also to do the detailed work at the legal and technical level to make sure that we do this in a smart and an effective way. So call on us.
Mayor Hills, if I may, could I leave you with one more technical piece of information? And it has to do with the smoke-free workplace and sort of folding electronic cigarettes into places where tobacco use is already prohibited. As we've heard public comment and I've sort of participated more and more in this conversation, I just want to make sure you understand that when people say, no, electronic cigarette, it's just water vapor. There's no risk to secondhand exposure. That is not true. And the science is limited, but there is a substantial emerging body of evidence that suggests that there are all kinds of chemicals in these liquids that are exhaled and that can be inhaled by bystanders. So given the choice, I'd rather stand next to someone smoking an electronic cigarette than a regular cigarette based on what we know now. But I just want to be very clear that we not only want to not lose ground with our youth in renormalizing smoking behaviors by including electronic cigarettes in smoke-free workplaces. We also want to, as Jay said, we want to protect people who choose not to use these products and don't care to wait the years to decades that it's going to take to really sort out what's in them and determine the health risks that are there.
So as the author of the city's fragrance-free workplace policy, does a smoker of a blueberry cobbler e-cigarette have blueberry cobbler breath? It's actually a serious question.
Good question.
Most likely.
Because as we found out when we were doing the fragrance-free policy, fragrances are proprietary too, and you can't find out what's in them. So I would suspect that some of these flavorings are also odoriferous. I mean, you said that they smell good to kids. Mm-hmm. So that, again, might trigger harm to bystanders, even if it's not cigarette smoke type. It may be a more pleasant fragrance for some people, but for others it may cause asthmatic attacks or other allergic reactions.
Right, and part of it is they're so unregulated that when studies, just take a few off the shelf to actually see what's in them, then you can only comment on what's in those bottles on that particular day. But we're seeing different kinds of organic compounds, carcinogens, heavy metals, particulates. So again, with tobacco, the burden was really on the public, to wait for the science to catch up and then for the policy to catch up. We have a chance to do this right by including electronic cigarettes in places where tobacco smoking is not allowed, and to really, again, protect the people who are choosing not to use these products.
Yeah, I'm glad you used that phrase, because obviously the burden shouldn't be on the public. And again, it's frustrating that we're even having this conversation. If something's going to be inhaled and ingested, and if the manufacturer of that product is not willing to disclose in detail what its contents are, then it is reasonable for the community to assume that those contents are toxic until they're proven otherwise. Mm-hmm. We don't have to prove that someone's product is safe. They have an affirmative obligation to prove their product is safe. And if they're not meeting that responsibility, then all the more reason to regulate. So I think, again, we as a community and you as a Board of Health and we as a city have every reason to be aggressive on this issue, frankly, given also the history of these kinds of issues in the past. It's not like the folks that brought us tobacco were entirely transparent in what was being done to that product when it was being manufactured and marketed. So I think we have every reason to put the burden of proof on the other side of the counter.
You'll be glad to hear that the tobacco-free perks policy that we're going to be taking up in a little while includes e-cigarettes.
Thank you. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to comment on this presentation? Please, come on up. afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Good afternoon, Commissioners. I think
your name in the record.
Oh, again. I'm sorry. Laquita Lanford. I'm really happy that this conversation is being brought up as we're going into conversation about our new marijuana law that's going to happen this July. And as a person in a community that, like, does a lot of advocacy and working around youth or just being, I take public transportation, wherever I have to go, these are the things or something that I have to see. But it is a very important conversation that we definitely need to be looking towards with our youth and the fact that they can and currently is using it for marijuana. And, you know, it's just being labeled as, like, when you go to the store, like a blunt paper with all these different flavorings, you know. So the conversation was good to be a part of and actually hear and learn a little bit more about that as we talk about prevention opportunities in the schools and more prevention opportunities around what it can do to a youth's brain in that short period of time. One thing that I do not like seeing, and I was talking to Ms. Judith in the hallway about seeing a parent smoking and they have their kid in their hand and that baby has no, like, nothing can be able to say, but you're just smoking away. And so with us being able to have some restrictions around this, this would be really good for our community and going forward with just some of the things that we have to deal with on a health level.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Can I have a motion, please, to accept this report?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Fritz, thank you very much for getting on this and being ahead of the curve or catching up as quickly as we can. And I learned a lot this afternoon. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you very much for your report and your leadership. Aye.
Novick.
I learned a lot, too. Thank you very much, and Godspeed.
Hales.
Yeah, I look forward to doing the work with you on this and helping support good public policy, whether it's made at the county board or in city councils, including this one. One other point that I want to get into the record is there's also, we have a public safety responsibility at the city, just like you do with the county, and the manufacture of butane hash oil is a public safety menace in this country, both in terms of deaths and injuries and the leading cause of residential fires in a number of areas around the country. So it's such an explosive substance that it's actually a big public safety issue as well. So I hadn't myself made the connection that, oh, that's how that substance gets used. It gets put into one of these vaping devices and then inhaled. So we've got another issue there in terms of the hazard of these largely unregulated addictive products. So I'm really glad that you're on this. We're looking forward to working with you to do the right thing. Thank you.
Mayor, I think, yes. I forgot to vote.
Oh, Commissioner
Aye.
Novick, please.
Sorry.
And I'll do that too. Aye. Thank you very much. Okay, we're a little bit ahead of schedule. And I don't know if our presenters are here, so we'll have to take a 5-minute break and then resume at 2:45.